This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Night.
No good morning, Vietnam.
And whenever you're listening to this, thank you for listening.
Yes, I appreciate that too. And everybody who's listening to us and has been tuning in, even in these kind of like, as we've been saying in the last couple of episodes, the lean months of the NBA calendar year. Thank you for joining us. I'm glad you're here listening. If you're trying to just get your kick of your NBA addiction, because I mean, basketball is year round for the most part, even in the months of August, September. But fans really never stop talking about their NBA teams, though, even in months like this. Because it seems like when things settle down is when they obsess even more about it, because they have time to kind of soak in all the transactions. They obsess over the roster. And it's just the regular season is just far enough out of the way for fans' bases to convince themselves, maybe we do have a chance. Maybe we will win the title, or this is going to be the greatest thing ever, or I totally think this is going to backfire, you know?
Yep, and you know, the training camp rosters are filled out. Who's going to get that all-important 15th spot that Nuggets never going to play?
Yeah.
These issues matter.
Yeah, and trades are not even in the equation, because those don't kick in until, like, December, or maybe January, February. So things are settled pretty much for the most part for the NBA transaction sphere right now. But the one that did happen was a re-signing of one of the key players in the rotation for the Toronto Raptors, who is on his way to being a restricted free agent pretty soon, and that was going to be Jonas Valanciunas, the big man out of Lithuania. What's interesting about Jonas anyway when he came into the league is that he was actually drafted in 2011, but he didn't come over from Lithuania until a year later. So a lot of the guys that he was drafted in the same class as, like, guys like Kemba Walker and drawing a blank already, but some of the 2011 guys.
Enes Kanter.
We'll get to him in a minute. They basically already inked up their deals, whether it be unrestricted or restricted, depending on what the teams decided to do with their qualifying offers. Whereas for Jonas, he had another year to wait. And wait is kind of the appropriate term for Valanciunas, because it feels like we've been waiting for him, even for not only just for us as NBA fans, but really agonizingly for the Toronto Raptor fans.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Everybody's like, this is a really questionable deal. It's like, well, it seems sort of high now. He's produced nothing. And, you know, you were asking, like, well, what does this seem like? And I'm like, I had to, you know, dig back, and I'm like, remember when Indiana gave Jonathan Bender, like, $32 million or something, and, like, he had done nothing, and it's developing, and it's just, I see this as, like, we are committed to something new, and we know you're not that young, but, you know, eventually it'll be a bargain with the new cap, but...
Well, that's what we're kind of delving into. Now, his salary right now, going with the rookie deal, was $3.67 million. That was obviously a bargain, just based on the fact that he was, like, a starter. If you get a starter at $3.67 million in today's cap, that even under the cap that they had previously agreed to after the lockout, when, you know, the whole narrative behind the GM was penny-pinching, even with all of that, where they're trying to limit salaries, $3.67 million for a starting big man is pretty good. But now, I mean, they knew that they were going to be on the... They were going to have to get to this point, Masai Ujiri with Jonas, where they had to make a deal. And they obviously sat on their hands a little bit because they knew the restricted free agency was a year away instead of this summer. So they decided to just kind of wait it out and see. And the decision that they made was 4 years and $64 million. Now, that, by today's standards, that's not max level. It's somewhere hovering around, what, about $16 million? Is that exactly it, $16 million per year?
32, 64.
Carry the 5.
Yeah, it's just... it's abnormally high for somebody whose stats are quite
I wouldn't call him pedestrian, though. That's the thing. You know, you talked about Jonathan Bender. Jonathan Bender did nothing. His best year was in 2004 when Carlisle got there because he was a rebounder. But he didn't do anything. Jonas Valanciunas has at least had one good year. You know, one. I mean, I know it's only one, but, you know, that was the 2014 season when they made the playoffs. Let me look at that he had. He had 11 points. He had 8.8 rebounds. Now that's not screaming.
but then again, he hasn't had – the front court has never been a main concern for Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, that could sort of – might be a little bit of a defense because, all right, it's just him and, he's one of those players who needs somebody behind him.
Well, they spent the summer before spending so much to keep Kyle Lowry, so you're right.
Yeah, they kept Kyle Lowry, and it's just like, well, here's Psycho T, and
James Johnson,
Patrick Patterson, James Johnson.
Bebe Noguera, yeah, guys that are just kind of plug-ins, nothing that's going to move mountains. And then they lost Amir Johnson, who, to be honest with you, is probably their most dependable scoring big man.
He was the most dependable, but he had sort of, he'd been there 5 years. And that's what the Toronto fans sort of seem. It's like, well, it's sad to see him, but he had nothing more to give us, and he wasn't a starting caliber player anymore.
Yeah, and the thing, I think we talked about this when we closed out on the Raptors after they were eliminated in the playoffs by the Wizards in the sweep, is that he just didn't get better. It's not that he's a bad big man. 12 points and 8.7 rebounds this past season is good, and his blocks was 1.2, which was an improvement. Over the previous season, but the problem is it just didn't seem to me, Adam, like he got better.
Well, the problem is, you're 28. You should be in your prime now. Oh, wait, he's a 10-year veteran, so now he's passed because he has tons of mileage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you peak when you're still developing now.
Okay, now the economics of the deal. Now, obviously, we're in that weird position, like we're going to be staying in until the new cap kicks in 2016 because they couldn't negotiate like a stuttered plan to try to implement the new salary cap. This has been discussed in previous episodes, and most people are already kind of caught up and up about it. But just basically, the Cliff Notes version is a lot of NBA teams are going to be walking into new money in 2016. So people are kind of going into negotiations now with the expectation that, well, these contracts are going to kick in the following season, not this season, so you can't go by the current salary cap, which is in its last season upcoming. You got to go based on the new salary cap, which is going to have an increase in, I think it's an increase in about $12 million or maybe even 20 between now and then the next season.
Oh yeah, that seems to be the case. It's like, look, pay our guys a little bit more now. We know we're not going to be like, well, he was worth 16 this year. Well, next year he's worth 25 now.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be, one foolish team, Sacramento, that might blow it out of proportion. But there's no reason like half these players should be now making double their salary just because the cap went up so huge.
Well, it's not like the stock market. It's not like all of a sudden these salaries go up and then they go back down. It kind of felt that way in 2010 and 2009. When the general managers were crying poverty, a lot of them were, and David Stern was backing them up, obviously, because let's be honest, and it's the same situation in the NFL and any other professional sports league, the owners kind of run the commissioner, they employ the commissioner. Now David Stern probably wielded more power as a commissioner individually than probably any of the other commissioners that we had had in the past maybe 30 years since Pete Rozelle resigned. But when it comes to Stern, of course he'll be in the support of the owners, and he got out there in 2010, tried to get out basically before the players union tried to make their case with the lockout and said, look, we have all these teams that are operating at a loss, including some of our bigger franchises like the Lakers and the Boston Celtics and such, but the problem was, and I mean, this happened in the NFL with the lockout at the same exact time in 2011, when the players union asked the owners to open their books, they refuse to. Now, I mean, obviously that's pretty, deceptive that you claim that you're losing money, but you don't want to show the exact economics of how much you're actually making or losing. But the whole point of this is that they're trying to figure out a way to explain how much money can be made and whether or not when these salaries soar the way they are with people like Jonas Valanciunas, like you mentioned with Enes Kanter, who actually made more money than Jonas Valanciunas, which I can't understand, But the point of it is, it's not like it's just going to drop all of a sudden. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, in the next 5 years, that money's going to get away from them because it's all based on the new television contract. The television contract is signed, sealed, and delivered.
Oh, yeah, it's based on that. And, like, you know, don't expect, you know, ticket prices to go down or anything to go down.
Exactly. You know, it's not it doesn't fluctuate. That's just not how business works with pro sports. You know, it's a set rate, and if the owners could influence it so that players could only, if there's a rise in salary cap, that they could implement the rise over a certain period of years, then sure, they would be great for that, because that means that we don't have to spend as much money. But the thing that's transparent about it for the owners, you know, versus the argument that they were making before the 2011 lockout is, you're opening these pocketbooks like never before. The NBA general managements and the teams spent more money this offseason than any other summer in the history of NBA basketball. How are these teams actually losing money? Is it because they're just dumb enough to take these deals, or they're just not losing money at all?
Well, it's, you know, the amount of, I would assume, you know, okay, yes, the city paid for them, yes, but I assumed the amount of the insurance and the amount of, you know, because the city built them, but who really owns these buildings? Mm-hmm. And how much is your lease? How much do you get off concessions? How much, you know, are you getting? You know, I if you told me Philly was making money, I'd be just, like, floored. Because you can't make money if people aren't showing up in the seats and aren't buying tickets.
Yeah, but then there was the Clipper problem. And that was, you know, with, you know, what I'm talking about with Ballmer. You know, where he buys a franchise that had been valued at less than a third of the, about maybe about 5 years before, it was less than a third of the value that Ballmer bought it for. So if Steve Ballmer buys it for $1.8 billion, then that team is worth $1.8 billion.
Well, the thing is, it's a tricky, and now we're just getting to economics.
Yeah.
There's things like Twitter, which, you know, has hardly ever made money, if ever, but it's valued at billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to be making money for it to be worth something, because, you know, you get the, you know, merchandising, games, licensing, all of that stuff. But it's just like, you know, how much is the operate? How much does it cost to hire, you know, 300 workers for the evening?
Yeah, actually put the wheel into motion, you know?
Yeah, to open up the building, to turn on the lights, to have the insurance coverage for 20,000 people there, and, you know, liability insurance every day. And, yeah, there's numbers in there. Plus, it could also be, you know, well, we don't want to open our books because we make some very stupid choices. And, well, so-and-so's brother-in-law has the concessions contract. That seems sort of shady.
Yeah.
So, you know, which seems to happen everywhere. And it's just like, well, we're not going to open it, not because, well, we don't want to show much money we're losing, but it could be, well, you're making stupid choices here, and this team is run more efficiently than your team is, and...
Do you think this will backfire, though, in about a year or two when Michelle Roberts goes really hard at Adam Silver? Because this is really going to be the moment of truth for Adam Silver. His first big challenge was obviously Sterling. He passed that with flying colors because he got out on the PR war before things got really nasty, and he just basically wiped his hands clean of Donald Sterling, which, in hindsight, was actually pretty smart, even though legally... It wasn't exactly legal, which is true. I mean, he didn't really – he had the authority based on a board of directors type of, like, exemptions that he was able – it's kind of like the exempt list that Roger Goodell suddenly made up for the players that had been arrested, but he didn't want to suspend them because it would look like he was punishing them too harshly, and he didn't want them to go to arbitration and like Tom Brady did, and But the point of it is that, you know, this is going to be the moment of truth for Adam Silver. It's going to be when Michelle Roberts kicks in with the players' union and says, okay, we're sitting on our hands. We know that these teams are making money. You can't lie behind the fact that they're losing money because they claimed they were in 2011, and now they're spending money like it's nobody's business because now they have all this television revenue. So do you think this summer might backfire for some of these general managers and some of these teams when they say, well, you're claiming you're losing money, but you just gave Enos Kanter $80 million?
Well, no, because then you could, if you're not paying the players, that could go into collusion. Mm-hmm. Of where we're going to try to keep the prices down. You know, we've all agreed we're not going to pay somebody like Enos Kanter. We're not going to have a bidding war for all these players. We're not going to pay, you know, Amir Johnson, a player of his caliber, $24 million, because we need to keep our money down. That would be even worse. This is just the, you know, how do we distribute all this money?
Well, and it's also influenced, obviously, by the elitist class. And and when I say elitist class, I don't mean the owners. I mean the players. And that's that if the best players in the league are going to be demanding more, then, of course, it trickles down in which, okay, well, then the mid-level exception is this and the rookie contract should be this. You can't keep those numbers the same and then give more money to the NBA, quote-unquote, superstars, guys like Kevin Durant and a LeBron James. And those players are smart. Their agents are smart. They've already positioned themselves so that they can get as much money out of these new revenue streams as early as possible instead of having to wait. Valanciunas didn't take that chance, or did he? Like, does this seem like a contract where he probably wouldn't have gotten as any more than what he got now if he had waited a year?
No, there's always a team that could go away, but it's just like, you know, some players are like, look, you know, give me a fair deal. Give me, you know, what I'm worth. I like being here. I like the town. I like the franchise. Give me something, and I'll gladly take it for the security, which is like a lot of players did. Obviously, you know, we're going to mention soon, you know, how some players are positioning themselves for this new max deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just like, look, why, you know, why are we splitting hairs over a couple million dollars down the line? If I could get 60 now, why would I want to pass that up in hopes for 80? And you see somebody like Dante Exum just go down and be like, well, this was his fourth year. There goes his max deal.
Hands on the table. Is Jonas Valanciunas worth $60 million a year?
No, of course not. It's even funnier, you had Tristan Thompson pull away from an $80 million deal because he...
He made a mistake.
Because his peers were making more than him.
Really think he made a mistake, because if it doesn't work out for him, now that they have some of their rebounding back coming off of injuries and Kevin Love coming off of an injury, if Tristan Thompson doesn't play as much next year and his rebounding numbers go down, now you've negotiated against yourself.
Well, they have, you know, Varejao, I assume, should be back for his 30 games.
Yes. Now, there's rumors he might have that they were dangling him in a trade with that trade to try to get another trade exemption alongside Brendan Haywood. And then this is complicated, but merging the two trade exceptions together to get another really good player. But it didn't happen.
And that's only because to try to make the salaries work. It wasn't because anything else, but... You know, they did just sign, you know, Russian veteran Sasha Khan from your Pride of Kansas.
I remember him.
Not a big deal player. Again, 7-foot big man. That's a body.
From Russia. Yeah, he played with Mario Chalmers and Darrell Arthur and Brandon Rush. That was that great Kansas team that beat Memphis when Chalmers hit the three-pointer over Derrick Rose. I don't know how well he's played in Russia. He's gotten decent reviews from the international, you know, analysts that have been watching him over the past few years. But what can he provide? You know, he's not going to get in front of Timofey Mozgov on the depth chart.
He's not going to get in front of him, but, A, he's a fellow Russian to keep Mozgov happy. Also, Tristan Thompson, he's another big guy. You know, we've replaced your body with somebody else.
Do you think that a buddy system is kind of important for some teams, even though they'll never admit it? Now, I know Zoran Dragic just got moved, and then he got waived pretty closely thereafter. But, like, having Zoran with, you know, Goran, his brother, and then, you know, for example, Joe Ingles, who's from Australia, played, you know, got a deal with the Utah Jazz around the same time that Dante Exum did. I mean, are these just purely coincidental, or do you think that there is something there?
I don't think it hurts. I mean... Because, you know, these are for young kids. You don't see any 30-year-old veterans coming, you know, like, oh, I need my buddy with me. It's, you know, the homesickness factor. Like, okay, you're foreign, you're from a different country. Let's get somebody who's, you know, you're not just sitting by yourself with other people. You're, you know, granted, yes, Australian, half these guys
guess,
are, you know,
I guess I'm kind of getting to the point of, are they piggybacking? Like, I remember when Anthony Davis got drafted by New Orleans. Well, the second-round pick was Darius Miller. Now, I'm not trying to slight Darius Miller, who was a four-year player at Kentucky, but I don't think it was a coincidence that Darius Miller came with Anthony Davis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just to make, you know, you bring him in under the, like, look, we're going to help him. He's the superstar. You know him. you can help us help him.
Yes.
As opposed to, hey, welcome to this new town. You're now an adult. You know no more. I want to sleep in, miss practice, miss game, I'll be late. No, you don't have that. Everything is, you know, you got to be 5 minutes early or you're late.
You talked about how you're not sure how much Jonas Valanciunas is worth, and that's a legitimate point. And like you said, it's a very indifferent topic with Jonas because of the jump in salary being so steep, but because of the new cap, you might be able to justify it based on what he could be able to do down the road because of his youth. It's one of those kinds of things where everything is kind of at a standstill when it comes to, like, you know, your weaponry in a debate, because every point is pretty much equal. Anthony Davis deserved the money he got, even though he definitely got it's not that he didn't deserve that new money that he's going to be getting on his new max deal, which is going to be close to $30 million per year. It was just so surprising because we haven't seen that money yet. He was the first of his kind. Do you see anybody coming down the road in 2016 where, I mean, obviously outside of Kevin Durant and LeBron James, let's just knock those out.
Okay, let's start with that. Mm-hmm. Do you want 30-year-old LeBron James who has more mileage on him than Larry Bird?
I think we talked about this before.
You give him a 5-year deal?
I'd still do it because even with all the tread on his tires, he still was an elite player, even though I did not think he was in his prime anymore in Cleveland last year. He was still.
How many years do you think he has left of being elite? 3?
4.
Okay.
4.
I was going to say plus and minus 3.
I think he'll get to 2020 and then it'll be over.
Okay.
Or not over. I don't want to go that far.
Declining.
That'll be 16 seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, 16 seasons, my God. I mean, even at 2000, you know, if Michael Jordan still played, you know, I still think he would have been losing it. Like, that's the one thing about the Jordan retirement, the second one in 99, that people don't think about. I think he was declining anyway.
Well, look at Kobe now.
Yeah.
If you know, he had a max, he's getting max money now, and it's just, well, this is what he is. All right, other names, just quick yes or no's. Dwight Howard.
Now, where are we setting the max at, 30 or 28?
Let's say 30. Nice number. Let's not try to be like...
I can't go that far. I would go with 26. I think he's in decline.
Andre Drummond.
I would give him the money. Because of the rebounding and the offensive rebounding.
And he's young and he's only going to get better. Al Horford.
But the free throws are such a fucking problem. It's the same problem I had with Dwight when he was younger in Orlando. You know, it's a huge black hole. You know, I was rewatching an Open Court episode on NBA TV, and Isaiah Thomas had, I guess you could say, quasi-controversial comments about how he felt like they were talking about weak links on past teams in the 90s, and he thought that Karl Malone was the weak link of the team because of his free throw shooting. Can you be the weak link of your team if you're the superstar and you do all these great things, but you have that one nagging problem, like, you know, Karl did and like Shaq did, and I'll give you another example, like Magic Johnson didn't play great defense.
No, you can't be the weak link because you're doing. Because it's like, let's go back to, like, you know, the Iverson 76 in the finals. You just have one player willing you to go to the finals. You have Malone and Stockton. Who else was on that team? Mm-hmm. You have nobody else providing that third man role. Cleveland crapped out because nobody, you know, J.R. Smith stepped up for one game, but nobody could be consistent. Mm-hmm. There was no, you know, we have the Sacramentos winning because of the team effort. You need that third player, and you know, so, nobody mentioned Stockton, but he didn't really do anything.
So when you're signing Andre Drummond to a big deal like that, which I would give him, you're not signing your death sentence. You're not signing like the guy that's going to cost you a championship. It's the other guys that are going to cost you, is what you're saying.
You wouldn't, if you don't have your superstar like the Andre Drummond, you're not going to probably make it to the finals. Mm-hmm. For everything he gives you missing in free throws, he's still going to give you 15 rebounds and 20 points. Yeah. And then
that's one of the points from the Fab Five documentary that I always remember, because there was an assistant coach who did some interviews named Jim Dutcher. and he recruited him, and they were in the segment that talks about the infamous timeout, and it was a horrible mistake, and I mean, we've talked about it, everyone's talked about it a million times, but Jim Dutcher made a great point, and it's a simple point, and that's like kind of speaking to what you're saying, is that without Chris Webber, you're not even in the national championship game. You're not there. Would you rather be there and blow it, or would you rather just not be a contender?
Yeah, exactly. Would you just want to, you want to be the number one seed, or you want to be like a number three or four seed with giving it to, you know, giving his money to Tristan Thompson or something?
Exactly. You got any other names?
All right, other names. Al Hortford and Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal, yes, because he's a good playoff performer, but no on Al Hortford because of his age.
All right, a couple old people obviously know Gasol and Dwayne Wade. So we're just getting to him. Here's a interesting
Dwayne,
one.
Dwayne Wade, I'd give it to him for 1 year. I'd give him. Well, can I say 25? I'd give him $25 million for 1 year, and just see how it goes.
If it was a farewell year.
Yes, but I would still get value. It ain't like Kobe where I might get nothing. Like I might get something out of Dwayne Wade.
All right, and then here's number 9 and 10 of the top free agents. One of these is interesting. Uh-huh. DeMar DeRozan and Mike Conley.
Mike Conley, yes. He was drafted. Now, he's older than DeRozan. Well, yeah, he is, because they were both one-and-done guys, and Conley came out in 07, and DeRozan came out in 09. But Conley, I would give it to him because, as we talked about previously, the point guard depth is so deep that you've got to have a really good one, and if you have one, you need to hold on dearly to him, and Conley's that guy. DeRozan, there's a lot of really good small forwards who can shoot and are athletic. I mean, I'm not saying that he's like a dime a dozen. He's a good player. He's been the All-Star game. But I could probably take my chances, let him walk, take his 25 to, you know, 20, maybe 20 million, and maybe just take my chances with another small forward. What about you?
I wouldn't. He's not worth max money, but he's definitely young enough to be sort of a cornerstone. We'll see how he plays in this new system this year.
But
if he adapts, he plays really well, like I sort of expect him to, mm-hmm. you know, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, you know, that's cornerstone numbers. And if you can adapt to it, there's no reason he shouldn't be getting his money.
So you would take the chance on DeRozan?
I would take the chance on him over Lowry and Terrence Ross, forget him.
Conley, the only problem there is that Zach Randolph, you know, I mean, Sebo's ageless, but he's not. He seems ageless at times, but he will run out of gas. He will. You know, you gave Marcus Gasol, you got a great deal for Marcus Gasol because you did get him based on, you know, $20 million, but he was worth $20 million anyway under the old numbers. So you got a solid returning all-star center at what you could almost call in the next couple of years a discount. So you did good there, but Randolph will be gone soon.
And the funny thing is,
and Conley might be the guy.
He should be the guy, and there's no backcourt help. They've developed no two guard.
Yeah, Tony Allen's not getting younger either. Yeah,
exactly. But the funny thing is, we could be having this conversation last year about how Kenneth Faried got way too much money. Now $48 million seems like a bargain.
Yes, that's true. Now there are some like Eric Gordon, what he made, and Roy Hibbert with his 15. Like even now, that looks like a bad deal. Even with the new numbers, that looks like a bad deal. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I mean,
at
the end of the day, Kobe Bryant's $25 million in the last 3 years. Is that a bad deal?
It's that was the Derek Jeter. You know, thank you for being loyal to our team. You know, we're going to, you know, here's your farewell money. You've earned, you know, you're not earning it now, but you've earned it through your rings. And, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years ago, this is the money you're getting now. Or thank you, as opposed to saying, in theory, it should be okay. You're no longer worth much money. You've either play for 10 or thanks for playing.
Mm-hmm. Is Harrison Barnes one of those names on that list?
Oh, he is not in the top.
That one's interesting because he's...
Harrison Barnes is number 17 on the list between Al Jefferson and Rondo.
Al Jefferson might not even be playing anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, those knee problems really worry me.
Harrison Barnes is not that good.
Or is he? I mean, in the finals, he just kind of woke up all of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden he woke up, but you had 4 other people around him.
Oh, of course.
Who, you know, seemed to take everything away.
You know what we call it? Kurt Rambisitis.
You could say, oh, well, he still has potential because he's still young, but he's never going to be the first, second, or third option on that team.
On a championship team, that's true. You know, I think there were moments where, I mean, the problem was for the Golden State is that Steph Curry had come off of an injury, I guess you could call it a concussion when he fell in the Rocket game. And then there was Klay Thompson who had who got stitches. So all of a sudden they needed a shooter, and Harrison Barnes just kind of woke up all of a sudden. But is that one game worth spending $20 to $18 million a year over the next 5 years?
I don't know. Is that worth it? He's not even he doesn't even play starters minutes. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna pay all that money for someone who's not gonna be on the court just because he's has potential and he fits.
Yeah.
With Draymond Green, we had this argument, back and forth. But, we sort of both agreed he's the glue on that team. Harrison Barnes, to me, is just, well, you can take him or leave him and you have somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other ones that we kind of weren't able to track down on the list that you had with the elites?
No, because the names start dropping off really, really fast. Who else?
It's not just the drop-off. It's that when you get to the top, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, I'm thinking of another one that might be free in the next year or two that's an elite guy.
Harden.
James Harden, Dwight Howard. Even Dwight Howard, who I'm kind of indifferent to, too. They're going to make their money. They're going to make their 20.
They're going to make their money, but it's just like you're positioning yourself. Oh, he's going to take a 2-year deal for this. And it's just like, well, if the top names on the list are, once everybody misses out on LeBron and Durant, okay, so the next top big three are Drummond, Al Horford, and Bradley Beal. Those aren't, corner.
They're not needle movers. I think Drummond can be, but I'm not sure about the other two that you said.
I'm saying once you lose on the big three, that's the next three.
By the way, as an off-topic, how good is that 2012 draft class?
It turned out to be very deep.
Let me shoot it out and see, because I know one of them was Draymond Green in the second round, and he just made big bucks, and obviously Anthony Davis at top. But let me take a look on the little week.
I just know once Anthony Davis, you just sort of tuned out for a while. No, that was the one. It was deep because you had some second round.
Well, even in the tournament, I was watching and I said, man, there are some really nice prospects on some really good teams. Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who is in that extension purgatory.
Don't look at the top of the list. I was referring how it was deep because you had, in the second round, Draymond Green, Quincy AC, who's still getting minutes.
Yeah, he's with the Kings now.
He's back at the Kings and happy to be there. Chris Middleton was a second-round pick as well in the same draft.
Yeah, a guy who was very close to Mr. Irrelevant was Robbie Hummel, and he's still in the league. Kyle O'Quinn is still in the league. This is just the second round I'm talking about. Mike Scott. Unfortunately, Mike Scott got into a little bit of trouble. I hope he gets
a lot of.
What did he do? It had something to do with marijuana.
Lots of ecstasy in his car. More than one person should possibly.
Man,
have.
Just stick to the marijuana. Why you got to do the MDMA?
But yeah, just don't look at the top of the draft because you're gonna see a Thomas Robinson and Austin
Chris
Rivers.
Chris Middleton came out of Texas A&M.
That's what I already.
Oh, you mentioned that guy.
Good to see we listen.
Jay Crowder, 4-year player at Marquette, one of your guys now, who's in the foxhole.
Yeah, and again, you have Austin Rivers, Dion Waiters, Thomas Robinson, not so much. Oh, there's Jay Crowder round too. Draymond Green,
Jared Sollinger, T. Jones for the Houston Rockets, who played really well. John Henson, I'm just not sure yet. He's good. He's got shot-blocking ability.
He's not exciting at all.
Well, no, he's not exciting. He plays for the Bucks. No one on that team's exciting except for the Greek Freak, But I don't.
But
think that's
he's just extra
for.
Bland, and he's from that Tim Duncan mold where he might be better, but no one's just willing to be. I don't want to watch him.
Yeah, Lillard always got his big bucks. And there sits Dion Waiters and Austin Rivers in the top 10. Okay. And so let's, you know, we were talking a little bit about James Harden, who might be walking to some pretty big money because he didn't sign. He was kind of knee-deep into his contract, and he just made a big shoe contract with, was it Adidas?
He is, yeah, Adidas. He's the probably the last big signee to Adidas.
Is that $200 million or is it $300
million? $200 million over, like, 13 years or something.
Okay.
I want to say it. So, either way, it's ludicrous amount of money for...
For Adidas, who's got very low market value, they've really fallen off the map over the last 10 years. Really, since they lost out on LeBron, you know, in 2003 when Nike got him. And then Kobe bailed on them. Kobe had a dispute with Adidas that was so contentious that he changed his jersey number because he couldn't get the copyrights back for KB8 on his shoe. So he said, okay, then I'm just going to change my number when I sign with Nike. And that's exactly what he did.
And I ever since did not know that.
I think the number 8 to number 24 was something related to his shoe licensing. It had something to do with him having to change it. But that was one of the main reasons behind. And it just seems like it's never recovered.
Wow. It's just like, but these numbers are so crazy. It's like, how are they? I know, yes, shoes cost $2 to make, and you're selling them for $200, but $200 million for somebody just to wear your shoes and develop shoes? Like, are shoes really selling outside of Jordans? Is it really that high of a market value?
I to my daughter playing a playhouse for Chick-fil-A, and they had like a boy whose dad was talking to another lady, and he had the little LeBron shoes, and he told me they were $90 for those shoes. $90 for LeBron James new brand kid shoes.
It's just like, why, you know, outside of him, and okay, I need to have them, but just like, I remember back in the day, I had like the Grant Hill Feelers or something. Mm-hmm. Remember, he was some obscure company. It's just like, well, what, you know, where is all this money going?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, look at the money that Shaq made doing very cheap brand on Starter. Now Shaq makes huge money based on just doing, you know, cheap shoe work. You know, it's not that it's like the worst, like, it's not like Starter is like the worst type of like durable brand of shoe, but it isn't very durable because I've worn a million of them and none of them last. But not compared to like a New Balance or a Nike or a Reebok, but he's made huge money because he's dipped the Starter brand, his Shaq brand, into the retail side of things, and it's paid off with dividends. Whereas with Adidas, they kept going for big fish. They never scored. They tried to get Kevin Durant, and Nike matched the deal anyway. And now they were so desperate that they think James Harden can be the face of the Adidas brand. I remember when Tracy McGrady at one point was the Adidas brand
And it was Under Armour who went after Durant.
Oh, it was Under Armour that did it.
Yes.
So they didn't even have the money to try to get Durant. But they had $200 million for James Harden?
It's at some point you can't keep going up and keep going up. And it's sort of, here's our line. You're way too much as is, but we can't give you the entire, you know, company. Because I doubt, like, you know, okay, Under Armour, their new Notre Dame thing, I probably will give them. But I doubt, we're supplying, you know, field hockey equipment to Northern Idaho University. I doubt that contract has given them lots of money. And, you know, some smaller school actually. So you have to pay $200 million that is one person to carry through.
They haven't been for a very long time. So, obviously, Under Armour kid, they've made really nice, you know, partnerships with people like Jeff Curry, Jordan Seether, who had a great year PGA Tour. He's their most win basketball entity in the Under Armour. And obviously, they have so much money dipped into the college ball, namely the University of Maryland. That's kind of like Maryland. You know, Maryland is for Under Armour, what like Oregon is for Nike.
Well, yeah, because the founder went to Maryland.
Exactly.
Like, the funny thing is, like, okay, yeah, Under Armour has Steph Curry, but are you gonna go buy the jersey as opposed to just the random T-shirt or the shoes?
Well, because the ankle breaking, I think people will think of it and say, well, because he wears those shoes, he hasn't had as many injuries.
But like the average person on, you know, I doubt you'll be running around your office and be, oh, I got Steph Curry's, I can now, you know, run back and forth a little faster and we're done. It doesn't matter for the average person.
Well, no, not the average person, but basketball fans are not average people. People like you and me. when you're that deep into it. But then it also goes back to your affiliations with ABCD camps, which Nike has been embedded in for so long. And Adidas is still too, just not.
The thing is, the point is, I'm trying to say is, are you going to be more apt to get the jersey to support? Like, oh man, I'm going to get the Warriors jersey because it's a Warriors. Or just be like, oh, I'm just going to get random Under Armour shit. That's what I'm saying. Paying $200 million for Harden.
It depends on how closely you can link that brand with that person. You know, like for Michael got so big with Nike that they had to give him his own division, Jumpman.
Exactly.
So now you're not getting, you know, I mean, I remember the main guys who was under that division was Derek Jeter. So when you get Derek Jeter stuff, you're not getting Nike or Derek Jeter stuff. You're getting Jumpman, you know. Same thing that happened with Tiger, you know, when he went from Titleist to Nike. You're not getting
have people buying the Tiger polos and the Tiger, you know, golf clubs and everything else. And
Does the beard help James Harden in that case?
The beard might help, but it's just like, okay, for Nike, how much is Melo's, you know, signature getting right now? How much is his signature line of shoes paying off?
You see, I'm not big on the shoe economy, so I can't really say for sure.
But I'm saying that you're just so quick to give all this money to all these players. You know, are you buying the shoes? Or are you just, again, is the Knicks jersey, which will be Reebok in a couple years, is that more value? Is it all moot because Reebok has the jersey money?
Well, what do you think there? Do you think that there's kind of more of a kinship with a player based on the shoes that he wears or based on the jersey that he wears? I'd probably say the jersey. You know, that's why we don't have all these annual reports of, like, oh, whose shoe is doing better. Most of the annual reports you see on sports business sites is whose jersey is selling the best, you know? And that's why there's so much obsession with uniforms getting changed, like, you know, the Clippers' ugly-ass jerseys, and then the Raptors just announced a new one that I didn't really care for much either. And I think that's why there's so much obsession there versus, you know, the shoes. I mean, how many different types of shoes have we seen, you know, in NBA play?
Yeah, it is, you don't even, you know, most of the players just sign just for the free shoes.
Yeah, the only funny part about it is that in the All-Star game, you don't have to wear regulation shoes, I believe. I remember there was one in particular where Chris Webber had like a new brand, and it was like glow. It was like really bright green. Do you remember this at all? It was like 2001 or 2002, and the shoes, like the new name brand shoes for all of these different stars who had individual shoes, like even Damian Lillard's got a shoe. They were all so different that
there's no unity maybe it should be all the same color. It's like, no, he's wearing purple shoes. He's wearing pink shoes. He has green. He has white. It's just all over the place.
Well, you know, and Dwight Howard's a big star, but if, say, James Harden makes big money, you know, it's like that old Michael commercial when, you know, Don Harper's looking down and says, hey, nice shoes. Well, obviously, everybody's going to wear Michael's shoes if they play for the Bulls, because not only are they comfy, but Michael is the brand, you know, whereas, you know, we're at a point in the NBA where even the superstar player has this big global brand. He has his own shoe. But then there's another guy on the team that's like second or third in line, and he has his own brand of shoes, like Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the, like, you know, that's how you mentioned with Under Armour, of getting sort of the young stars, you know, up and coming, as opposed to, well, let's try to get into a bidding war for super high priced people we know will break our budget.
Well, that's how Nike did it. Nike got early. And they did it right, even though people criticized them because they thought they were doing too much too soon. But they navigated correctly with LeBron giving him the $90 million. Now that looks like a bargain. The only thing about shoe deals that I've never understand, and I think you kind of mentioned this just recently, is that where does the money even come from to offer that? Does it come more from the affiliations that they have with the basketball activities or the sports activities, or does it just simply come from the sales? That's the part that I've never understood.
Yeah, I
you're stumped too, where the money's coming from. It's like Enron. It's like, where did you get all this? Where did you get $200 million from? Because I don't remember you selling $200 million worth in shoes.
And maybe that's why we don't see, you know, British Knights and, you know, I don't even know if Feelers are still around, but.
But I want to clarify about Kobe that was a rumor, but it was a. I mean, I've heard that from more than one person that it was some kind of inspiration behind like a bidding war, him switching from Adidas to Nike, because when he switched to Nike, all of a sudden he changed his jersey number. So I don't want to say it's absolute fact, but it's like one of those legendary rumors that I guess we'll never get, you know, true confirmation about unless it comes out of the horse's mouth. We'll wrap up, but do you want to talk about Deflategate a little bit?
Oh, it just needs to end. I'm just so sick of it, and even the reporters are sick of reporting on it, but it's just like they need to.
You were in a weird position because we just had a preseason game where the Patriots came to the Superdome to play the Saints. So, you know, I mean, Tom Brady has a really bad preseason game. Are you starting to think, well, maybe we need to play this Garoppolo guy?
Well, the funny thing is that happened last year, like two games in or three games in. There were some people saying Brench Brady because we got Garoppolo, and then
they had that really bad Monday night game against the Chiefs.
Yes.
Yes.
And then there were some reporters who said that. It's just funny. It's just like everybody just needs to be on TV and need to be like, well, this is my opinion, and if I'm not going to say it, I'm going to just, you know, start controversy. And the whole Deflategate thing is so blown out of proportion. It's just like, well, you can't get away from it. Other teams, well, what do you think about Deflategate? It's like, we just want to play football. And you know, the thing is, you know, you will never see that in the NBA because it's run so differently in the whole
Just get away. Let's just get away from the financial like infrastructure and the discipline structure of the NFL versus the NBA. We're not even gonna discuss that. We're kind of talking more of the rhetorical sense. Why in the NBA would something, let's say for example, I'm just gonna give you an example. Let's say, for example, that word came out that the San Antonio Spurs have been bugging opponents' locker rooms for, you know, 5 or 10 years, and that there was some team that had said that they had had proof that it happened, and, you know, the NBA investigates it, and they say that Tim Duncan had been involved somehow with it, and they punished Duncan. Why would this never happen in the NBA? Because I think I agree with you in that case, but I want you to explain why something like that would probably never happen.
Well, for one, it happens because they take more organizational control. Remember how Minnesota lost 4 draft picks in 5 years because
the Joe Smith deal.
Exactly. They're more of the quick, harsh penalties of this is an organizational control issue. The NFL, you know, a lot of the things...
They gauge the public sentiment. And Bill Simmons got in trouble for saying... He ultimately got fired for telling the truth, is that, you know, Goodell lofted out certain like kind of misinformation so that he could just gauge what the public sentiment was, and then he made the wrong decision anyway.
Well, the thing is, he just had no consistency. The Atlanta Falcons were guilty of 2 or 3 years of pumping fake crowd noise in for an advantage. Mm-hmm. They lose a 5th-round pick.
And I would say that's just as bad as deflating football.
Deflating football, yeah, that's the Patriots franchise. They got rightfully, okay, you lose a 1st-round pick, you get fined $1 million. Okay, that seems to be fair. But you're singling out your players, and the NBA doesn't seem to single out the superstars. It's just more like the only NBA we can really go off is the most famous is the Auburn Hills.
The Malice in the Palace.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was here.
That was
that was
a behavior problem. It was not a cheating problem. I mean, the thing is, like, It goes back to the root problem of, you know, what is cheating in certain sports. You know, I kind of lofted it out there, just one I could think of that would automatically be viewed as cheating. That's, you know, trying to clean in on what certain another team's game plan is. But, you know, let's say, you know, something like they were hiding that they were giving HGH to all the players. But even in that case, I don't think that would work in the NBA because people would say, oh, okay, he got popped for importance enhancing. When's he going to be back? You know,
yeah.
And if it's not a star player, no one's going to care anyway. But the point of what you and I are saying with the NBA correlation with Deflategate and why there would never be such a thing is that would there ever be a situation in which a superstar player like a LeBron James, like a Steph Curry, like a Michael Jordan even, would be in court with David Stern or Adam Silver to the point where they'd have to meet an arbitrator?
No, it wouldn't get that far because the teams seem to be more policing of their players. Obviously, yes, because they have a fraction of the NFL, but...
Is the NBA more familial?
The NBA is more familial, and it's just like, for notice, like, this star player has an attitude problem. He was benched this game. He was pulled out early. And it becomes a pride thing, like, well, I need to be on the court. Well, okay, you're doing conduct detrimental to the team. You're taking the night off. You're sitting at home. Next thing you know, he's trading block. And his value goes way down.
Now, accusations of collusion, both with the owners, the general managers for certain deals. You know, that's what happened with Joe Smith. And then collusion amongst the players of, like, buddying up and playing for certain teams. They were thinking about investigating the Miami Heat thing in 2010, but it never happened. But, you know, it's not, like, totally clean. I mean, there was obviously the Tim Donaghy scandal, which, you know, and the idea that the NBA was influencing the methodology of officiating games. But do you know what the problem with that is, Adam? We had encouraged the referees to call games a certain way for the last, like, 5 or 6 years anyway, and now they're all throwing roses at the NBA for cleaning the game because they influence how the refs decided things. So it's the funny part is that the most controversial thing to ever happen in the NBA in the last 10 years, which was maybe the Tim Donaghy scandal, it's kind of sort of the way that the officials, you know, run things in the NBA, and nobody has a problem with it.
Well, yeah, because that's what
when it comes going back to, like, the bet line, yeah, sure, I you know, in the spread, yeah, that's a big problem if that turned out to be true. I'm talking about influencing the direction of officiating games. If that happened in the NFL, oh my God, I don't know how the fans would be absurd.
Well, that'd just be a 4-game suspension for the ref.
But what I'm saying is, like, if Roger Goodell made a memo out, or somebody, one of his underlings had a memo out, and said, okay, we're gonna try to speed up games, or we want teams to run the ball more, so we're gonna take away certain passing liberty for quarterbacks and offensive linemen. Like, wouldn't NFL fans absolutely have a cow now?
Oh yeah, but then again, just to, you know, bring it back to the topic, I don't think Adam Silver has that much power. If it gets to him, it's already gone through the organization and sort of like the executive committee and sort of, you know, the team first and the management of the team. And it already went through so many years where, as opposed to here, it's just like, okay, you have authority to do whatever you feel like. Whatever your whim is today, we're not going to question it.
And not only that, it's just that Adam Silver is not that powerful, which in a way is true. It's that Adam Silver is not that stupid. You know, he's not stubborn enough to jump in, you know, unless the issue, like the Donald Sterling issue, presents itself as an easy out for him to just kind of wipe his hands clean. He's not going to dive in like Goodell sometimes does and says, okay, I'm just going to slap this suspension on, and if public demands more, I'll add on to it, and if the public demands less, I'll try to soften the blow. The problem is you can't do that usually if you have a track record for changing your discipline on the fly. That's not good.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, the thing also is Adam Silver already knew his legal outs before he even opened his mouth in the L.A. thing. Stern would just be like, look, let's just, it'll die down. Somebody else will do something stupid. Nobody say a word about this.
Yes.
And eventually it'll go away, okay? Just trust me. Everybody behave. Be good. When people look at you, just wait, smile and wave. You know, whereas Goodell is just, Goodell is just like a, you know, I have the authority, it's my ego, I'm deciding it, this is what it should be.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if the Spurs, who are basically the New England Patriots, the NBA, if something did come up? Wouldn't it be so, like, symmetrical?
It would just be confusing.
What would it be? Give me the NBA scandal that would just rock it.
Rock the...
Just give me something. Like, just an idea.
The Spurs or in general?
In general. You know, Chuck Klosterman a long time ago said, you know, this was like 10 years ago. He said, you know what would be the biggest scandal in the history of professional sports? If it turned out that a professional league had faked their entire season. You know, it's impossible, you know, logistically, but that probably would be pretty good. If an entire league two World Series teams just fixed the whole thing.
Well, again, the funny thing is, how indifferent must the regular season be if you could have one referee who could call a game to fit the betting line, mm-hmm. which is, you know, usually 5 or 6 points. They're not usually something crazy. But how strange is it, you know, you can get the game, it's like an extra 2 or 3 points, and nobody would even notice for years, and nobody cares.
Would it be something like maybe a superstar player in the finals kind of tanking, kind of like LeBron did in 2011? You know, something like that, maybe? Or is there something a little more sinister than that you could think of?
The only thing sinister I could think of is it has something to do with shot clocks and, you know, speeding it up for one team, but somehow not
lowering the goal, which I've heard accusations of before for teams.
You know, making one rim sort of softer than the other rim. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's just all organizational.
But you know what the problem is with that? Is that the ball touches, everybody touches the ball, and everybody, you know, touches the rim or tries to shoot. They would notice that stuff right away. Right away, even the referees would notice that. That's the one part about the inflated ball, the deflated stuff, that I just never understood. Like, how did the referee not realize it? That's the one part that I've never understood. Well, unless the issue just doesn't even matter.
The issue probably doesn't matter, but, you know, you soften the rim just a smidge, and then, you know, that one team is and then all of a sudden, tighten it back up during the intermission, during the, you know, when they switch back and forth, just a little fraction of an inch, just to make that...
Like one of those Nerf things where it's like a... pops up.
You know, just one of those things where it's like, hey, I'm getting a good roll today.
Yeah.
You know, both teams play on it, but there's ways for, you know, the team to do little, you know, would rock it, like, oh, wow, they actually did that. But, you know, for the most part...
I think it would have to centralize with the officials at the end of the day. You know, something like with the Kings and the Lakers that has been talked about forever in 2002. I think that would probably be as bad as it gets. Like, something involving, you know, we want this team to win, so you need to call things this way. That would be about the worst I can think of in basketball, because when it comes to the actual equipment and it comes to, like, the flow of the game, the flow is so, it's so free-flowing, you know, for lack of a better term, and everybody touches the ball. Like, it's impossible to influence that thing so that it gives one advantage from one team over another. You know, it would have to be internal. It would have to be within the function of the actual game from the outside in, you know?
That would be, then, probably the worst thing would be a superstar in collusion with a ref.
Ooh. So that, for example, Joey Crawford was calling fouls just for Kevin Durant.
Just for Kevin Durant, you know, has an altercation with, you know, he gets a foul by, you know, let's say Tim Duncan fouls him. Oh, all of a sudden it's a flagrant two now because he flopped a little, you know, he fell a little differently. And
there was communication between the referee and the player.
Yes.
And there was some type of, you know.
That would be the worst possible thing, is if you give a quick little nod. And
you know what would happen? We would obviously hammer down, okay, what games did he call that this player played in?
Exactly.
That would be interesting. I remember Ray Rice, I think, this was before he got in trouble. He said with the replacement refs, one of the replacement refs came up to him and he said, well, I need you to play well because you're on my fantasy team.
Well, one of them said that. Then Green Bay complained because a couple of refs were asking for autographs after the game.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, well, you know, that's just people over their head.
Yeah, but if you ever see the sound bites of the referee, some get a little harsh on the players, you know, when it comes, if they feel like they're trying to intimidate them or trying to get their way. And then some of them, they're very conversational. They just kind of chit-chat, and it's kind of left out there. But you don't want to cross an NBA superstar too many times, even if you're a veteran official.
Well, that's something like the same thing with the NBA refs. Some of them you can chat with, say your side, and they'd be like, hey, you know what, I might have missed it, or I disagree with you. But some refs, like, don't you say two words to me, I'll tee you up in a second.
And then, Chrome Dome Joey.
Exactly, but that would...
You cannot chit-chat with Joey Crawford.
That would be the worst, is if a player was in collusion with a ref.
But, all right, I think this was pretty productive, even though we had pretty much nothing to talk about.
Well, you know what?
I think we filled the time good, yeah?
This was episode 50.
Oh.
This was just a big L all over the place.
It was a big... the big L. That's a good title there. I think I might try to use that. Speaking of L, because I've noticed it with did you notice that that the NFL has had the 5-0 painted gold?
Yeah.
Field? Super Bowl 50. And give it to me.
Why?
Because we have to waste time before we get out of here.
Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, Yeah, just give it to me, because we're not going to talk about football too much after this. Unless it's the Saints or LSU.
Super Bowl 50, Green Bay. Green Bay and... Green Bay and Indianapolis?
I'll say... And I have no idea if this is even, like, very good, like, prediction value based on how many games they're supposed to win. I'll say the Ravens and the Seahawks again.
Oh, yeah.
It's boring on paper because of the defense, but what do you know? It's NFL football. I mean, it's not the NBA. NFL is very different. You know, you don't know who's good. You really don't know year to year.
No, it just changes. You know, could be.
In the NBA, it's pretty easy. We know who's going to be good. Depends on the start.
It could be Kansas City and Dallas, for all we know.